Welcome to People, Places, Planet Pod, the official podcast of the Environmental Law Institute, a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization working to ensure a healthy environment, prosperous economies, and vibrant communities founded on the rule of law.
Welcome to this week's episode of People, Places, Planet. I'm your host, Sarah Backer. Today is World Water Day, an annual United Nations observance day that highlights the importance of fresh water. Around 2 billion people around the world do not have access to clean and safe drinking water, and roughly half experiences severe water scarcity for at least part of the year. When water is scarce or polluted, or when people struggle for access, tensions can rise between communities and countries. That's why the theme of this year's World Water Day is Water for Peace. The Women in Water Diplomacy Network shares this goal of Water for Peace by engaging and supporting women water leaders in decision-making and peace-building processes. Women's participation at all scales of peace-building and conflict resolution is essential for the development and sustainability of agreements, including transboundary water-related agreements and water diplomacy processes. With around 40% of the global population living in a transboundary river basin, transboundary water cooperation is essential to effective water resource management. Higher levels of gender equality are associated with a lower instance of conflict. And since women are often underrepresented in political decision-making at the transboundary level, progress towards cooperative and sustainable management of shared waters is undermined. Since its launch in the Nile Basin in 2017, the Women in Water Diplomacy Network has hosted annual workshops and regular online events to advance inclusive water governance. Today I am joined by Elizabeth Cook, the Senior Manager of International Programs at ELI, who has led the network's process support team and network development since 2018. I'm also joined by Gwendina Lee Gatewood, the White Mountain Apache Tribe's first chairwoman from 2018 to 2022, and co-chair of the Indigenous Women Leadership Network, a partner in the North American Women in Water Diplomacy Network. Gwendina and Elizabeth, thanks for being on the podcast today.
Thanks for having us, Sarah.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
To start off our discussion, I want to learn a little bit more about how you both became involved in the network and how the network itself started.
The network got its start in the Nile Basin in 2017. The focus was on water insecure and conflict sensitive basins. And it was just abundantly clear that women were disproportionately underrepresented in water and climate negotiations and decision making forum. In the Nile Basin, one of the world's most water insecure basins in the world, we received requests from women water diplomats saying we're on our own and we wanted to support that process. So the network at that time began with a simple week-long workshop, bringing together representatives of the Ministries of Foreign Affairs and the Ministries of Water from countries along the Nile. And the participants wanted to keep it going. And what began as one workshop in the Nile Basin has now grown to a global network. We've launched and supported new networks in the Orange Sankou, which is in Southern Africa, and now here in North America. The intersectional issues of women, water, peace, and security have really resonated all around the world. We hope to see a strong Indigenous leadership at the center of the North American section of the Global Women in Water Diplomacy Network. What's been so amazing as we've developed partnership with the Indigenous Women's Leadership Network is how quickly the Indigenous leaders from North America have influenced the broader global network. We see just a real desire to learn more about Indigenous water governance and Indigenous science diplomacy across the network. So it's really been an important milestone, learning opportunity to bring out more Indigenous knowledge across the network.
Thanks, Elizabeth. What about you, Gwendina?
I joined the Indigenous Women's Leadership Network back in July of 2022. And it's a network of supporting current and future leaders within the Colorado River Basin, protecting our communities and environment through relationship building and exchange of information and development of leadership and other professional skills. And for me, Native American women serve as the backbone for many tribal communities. And we seek to provide support for these women. And so seeing how the network would be so good for many tribal women, I joined. And from there, started learning more about the role of the Colorado River Basin and how it serves so many people in seven states. And from there, in December of 2023, we had the opportunity to attend the Colorado River Water Users Association. And for me, that launch in December was a monumental event. Why? Because we had over 100 water policy experts and decision makers there supporting Indigenous communities, as well as Mexican representation, to come together to be stewards of this important network.
So why the focus on water? Why not energy or food or land?
In my language, we say water tu behida, tu bahurigi, tu chokoch and si, tu bichayeta wahaida. Water is the giver of life. Water provides sustainability to our people. It's sacred. Just like in the Christian way of using water for baptism, we use it to participate in ceremony. We use it to heal ourselves. We use it for the environment. We use it for medicinal properties. It's our spiritual and cultural connection to something even greater, in a sense that we are dependent on it. When the river dries out and dies out, so does our spirituality. When I was tribal chairwoman of the White Mountain Apache tribe, I advocated for water rights for our people, going to DC, meeting with legislatures, meeting with different water experts. And it's been over 40 years in advocacy and legislation. But today, for example, the Colorado River, the demand on it exceeds what the river can provide. And the impacts of climate change, the conditions are becoming hotter and drier. That's going to affect our Indigenous people's way of life, their ability to plant, their ability to use it for irrigation, commercial, municipal, and industrial use, energy generation, recreation, and our wildlife. We hunt, we fish, and if there's no water, it's going to affect that relationship and habitat restoration. As far as the Colorado River is concerned, it's 1,450 miles from the headwaters of the Rocky Mountains to the delta of the Sea of Cortez of Mexico. And it provides water to over 35 million people in seven states in Mexico. My goodness, that is a lot of people, and 30 federally recognized tribes. Tribes that have been in the basin since the beginning of time, and their reliance on that for their spiritual and cultural activities. It means so much to me to help move that knowledge and advocacy along and to help our people with the sustainability efforts. And the Indigenous Women's Leadership Network is a project of the Water and Tribes Initiative. The Water and Tribes Initiative aims to enhance tribal capacity to manage water resources and engage in water policy discussions and promote sustainable water use through problem solving. And when you think about it, everything else seems to have an alternative. There's an alternative to meat. There's an alternative to energy production. There is no alternative for water. And when water becomes compromised in any way, it's going to affect everything else. So we as Indigenous people need to join hands with others, lock arms, and move forward in the good fight to make sure that we continue to have water for future generations. And that means we need to listen to the water. And if we would just do that from an Indigenous perspective, I know that we could iron out a lot of these issues. If we work together and we collaborate and we network globally, it's going to be something monumental and wonderful.
Thanks, Gwendina. I really love your positivity. For our listeners who may not know, can you speak a little bit more about tribal involvement in water policy and decision making?
When there's discussions about water from a federal perspective, from a local perspective with government, it's always been a challenge for tribes to have a seat at the table. Tribes have been excluded from consultations, from discussions. And it's so important to have them at the table. You're leaving out a key component to what could be some solutions that you may have never thought of. And it's a different form of traditional ecological knowledge that can't be found anywhere else in books. And when I think about that being excluded, it really hurts because it's historical knowledge. It's knowledge that sustained our people.
Thanks so much, Gwendina. We spoke about Indigenous inclusion in water decision making. Now let's turn to gender inclusion. Elizabeth, what is the status of women's inclusion in water decision making?
The status is not looking good. We're not trending in a good direction for gender equality in water and climate decision making. We need to take some really concerted actions. We saw this again when the COP29 organizing committee was an all-male organizing committee, which has since been changed, but only after significant pushback. So there are some incremental changes in parts of the world, in parts of the institutions and decision-making that guide water and climate, but we have a long way to go. Women are disproportionately impacted by climate change impacts, water insecurity, floods and droughts, and at the same time, they're not well represented in these decision-making bodies. So it's extremely important, as Gwendina was highlighting, that these decision-making bodies in charge of making really critical choices do not currently reflect the societies they serve. And we need to make some real targeted efforts to make a change. We know that decisions are more sustainable, they last longer, they're more equitable when the decision-making bodies that are in charge of supporting the communities reflect the makeup of those communities. So not only is there a direct cost to not including Indigenous voices, women's perspectives, young representatives around that decision-making table, there's a loss of opportunity too, because there's different knowledge sources, perspectives, and experiences that aren't included in the decision-making. So investing in making those bodies inclusive by elevating, supporting, investing in women, investing in Indigenous voices is low-hanging fruit for improving our water and climate decision-making bodies, institutions, and policies.
What are the major barriers to inclusive decision-making for women? And do these barriers differ based on geographic location?
Sadly, there's a lot of the same. There are extremely rigid and persistent barriers to women's participation in regional and global water decision-making processes. When we survey women water diplomats in various basins and around the world, we hear a lot of commonality. Of course, sponsorship for in-person participation in major regional events is so rare. There will be a handful of sponsored participants, and financial resources are extremely impactful. Women water diplomats and decision makers have a lot of different responsibilities. Of course, care responsibilities are carried by women more than men in many parts of the world. Conflict barriers can restrict movements to enable people to travel safely and meet with their neighbors. Language barriers persist. In many basins, there are multiple languages being spoken, and just that basic level of communication, it really impacts the depth of dialogue or the levels of dialogue. as more climate and water decision-making processes moved online during the pandemic, we saw an immediate impact of the gendered aspects of connectivity and issues related to political barriers, like receiving visas and permissions to travel. These issues are really persistent around conflict-sensitive parts of the world, in the Nile Basin, in Central Asia, in the Middle East. These issues become extremely rigid barriers to equal participation.
Given the barriers, the work that the network is doing is so incredibly important. So what exactly does it mean to be part of the network, and can anyone join?
We organize activities and engagements for women water diplomats, both informal and formal water diplomats, around a variety of different thematic areas. So we do empowerment activities, capacity building, and peer-to-peer learning. There's research cooperation, and we really make an effort to join collectively at major international and basin events in order to raise the awareness and demand for gender equality at those types of events. We host online and in-person engagement activities for learning and networking and mentoring. There's really just a diversity of ways that people can get involved. If you are a listener from one of the basins where the Women in Water Diplomacy Network is active, then you can reach out and get in touch with the coordinator to see what kind of activities you can join. It's so incredibly urgent that we require everyone to really connect and relate to their water sources. Everyone needs to be a water diplomat in the future. That's really one of the reasons why this network was established, to create a constituency around the urgency of water cooperation.
And as far as anyone joining the network, yes, anyone can join the network. When you're talking about water discussions and the role of women, we all have to be stewards of our water and land. When you put strong women across the globe together and they are like water moving through the channels, it has a powerful force. It serves as a powerful reminder of the deep connection that we have to our natural environment. It's a call to action for all of us to honor these waters, not just as a resource, but as a living embodiment of our cultural identity and spiritual heritage. Indigenous or not, water is so sacred and so powerful. Hear it and listen to what Mother Earth is telling us, because she's crying for help. We have to then be that good steward, that beneficiary of knowledge that our ancestors gave us, and take that and act on it.
Very inspiring, Gwendina. I hope our listeners feel your call to action. Elizabeth, you have been with the network since its establishment. Can you share a network accomplishment that you are particularly proud of?
The network has really grown, wow, so quickly since 2017 in the Nile. Really, the new voices that are joining us from around the world have enriched our community so much. Last week, Gwendina and I were both in Vienna for the Women in Water Diplomacy Network's Global Network Forum. This is the second time we've had the opportunity to bring women water diplomats together from around the world. There's so much interest and need for women to support themselves. I couldn't get over how every time one of our network members took the microphone to share with us during the global forum, almost every speaker at some point said, "I was the first," or thanked the woman that was the first that opened the door for her and brought her along. We have so much more to do. Of course, we're really proud of our accomplishments along the way. I would be remiss not to mention that the Women in Water Diplomacy Network had a really impactful role at the second UN Water Conference, which took place last year after almost 50 years of water not being a focus event. During the 2023 UN Water Conference, the Women in Water Diplomacy Network held more than a dozen events and engagements, speaking at various panels, both within the UN and out. We really put a big effort in influencing this process, making a commitment that was developed by network members in partnership with a number of leading river basin organizations across Africa and around the world. It was a huge undertaking, and I really see the impact of that event as we head into the year of water and peace. The 2024 is world water focus is water and peace, and how can we have peace without women at the decision-making table? So it's really an important year for the Women in Water Diplomacy Network.
Well, Gundina and Elizabeth, thanks so much for being on the podcast today to discuss the Women in Water Diplomacy Network. Thanks so much for the work that you're doing. And happy World Water Day, everyone.
Thanks for having us, Sarah.
Thank you. And to all the listeners out there doing your part in people, planet, environmental work, thank you for listening to us. I've had a wonderful time.
Thank you for tuning in to People, Places, Planet Pod, brought to you by the Environmental Law Institute. We would like to hear from you. So please send us your questions, comments, and ideas to podcast@eli.org. And if you're interested in learning more about our work, attending one of our events, reading our publications, or becoming a member, please visit our website at www.eli.org.